Welcome to the Run True Diaries podcast. This is where we talk about managing your time and ways that helps you accomplish your running goals. Lace up to get your race up. Let's get moving.
Hey, hey, what's up everybody out there running on native land, and welcome back to the Run True Diaries podcast. I'm your host, Luis, aka Chico, and this is season 2, episode 8, making it broadcast number 18. Thank you for spending some of your precious time listening to the show. I appreciate it. I'm definitely not going to waste it. Lace up to get your race up and say it with me now. Let's get moving. Hey, but before we hit the starting line, I want to take a second and I want to personally thank each and every one of you for sticking with us through the break. There are times when we all need to take a step back and focus our energy elsewhere. This was a well-deserved break for me, and it paid off immensely. But the full story is going to be for a different conversation and a future episode. So stay tuned for that. But again, thank you for your continued support. So without further ado, connect your watches to your GPS signal, because we're at the starting line with this episode's guest, and he is an adventurer that shares his amazing stories through photography. His positive running vibes are contagious, and yet this runner remains humble despite his success. From pacing amazing, incredible athletes to running incredible distances, this Hoka athlete is at the forefront of the indigenous running movement. It is my pleasure to welcome to the Run Shoe Diaries family, Mr. Navahoka himself, Brandon Dugay.
What's up? How's it going?
Very good, very good. How are you?
I'm doing good, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, definitely. Well, like I said, welcome to the Run True Diaries podcast. You are our first episode back, and just like every run, we got to start up with a little bit of warm-up. So we're going to kick this one off with the Fast Five. These are rapid-fire questions that will give us some quick insight about you. Question number one, Mr. Brandon, is when it comes to running, do you prefer roads or trails?
I prefer the trails.
Question number two, regarding running events, do you prefer medals, buckles, challenge coins, or just the experience?
I think for me, it's a little bit of both. You know, the buckles are nice, the awards are nice, but the experience is, you know, where to me, I feel like, you know, you learn so much about yourself every race you go into. I mean, you're constantly learning, and you know, without the races, you won't have the experience, and the experience is, you know, what you take away throughout the whole race. So for me, I think it'll be the takeaways, the experience.
Yeah, I agree. Throughout all the races that I've done, I've come to realize, like, for me, it is the experience that I have come to enjoy the most and everything. You know, there's some buckles out there and medals that are just great. And it's just, you know, that experience, that is what I keep coming back to. That is what sticks with me and everything. So I'm right there with you on that answer. So question number three, besides athletics, what is your favorite pastime?
My favorite pastime, I guess, just what I did in the past. I guess soccer. I mean, I did that growing up a lot. You know, from when I was very young, I never really ran when I was young as far as like competitively, but soccer was my main sport, and soccer was something I did literally all the time, and I don't do it as much anymore, but yeah, I have a ball that I kick around every now and then, so.
That's cool. So, you know, so I started college when I was a junior in high school, and the college that I went to was Amherst College in somewhere in Massachusetts, I believe. But, you know, growing up on an Indian reservation, all you did was you either ran or you played basketball. Yeah. And majority of the time I was playing basketball. I wasn't great or anything. So one of the things that I did during this college expedition was I tried to take up soccer. And one of the things that I had the hardest time with was not using my hands. Like, the ball would fly up in the air, and the first thing, I mean, your reaction was just to grab it. And I, trust me, I don't know what positions they were or anything like that, but I just know, like, I was near, like, the center of the field. So I don't, whatever that is. What position did you play?
I played, like, right, I played forward, up towards the front. They call that. I mean, we call this like a striker. You're up in the front. You know,
striker.
You're kind of the ones that, like, you know, when you have the ball, it's like you and midfield are the ones pushing up towards the goal and kind of ultimately scoring. And I mean, I definitely enjoyed playing kind of like defense, like.
Okay.
Towards the end, but for my body type, I was too thin, and I would get destroyed. So I decided to stay up ahead. So
there you go. Question number four: being the runner that you are now, what is some advice that you would give to your younger self?
It would probably be to slow things down and to, you know, really be patient with training and, you know, try not to rush things. One thing I did when I was younger, especially like in the running world, I guess, when I first started, you know, taking running seriously, my training was all over the place. You know, I thought I could do the 100-mile weeks. I thought I could, you know, run like a professional, because in my mind, you know, from the start, I was like, all right, to be like the pros or somewhat like the pros, you got to run like them. You got to train like them. You know, I had Strava and I followed a bunch of my favorite runners and I saw their weekly training and I'm like, okay, we got to do this. And I remember the first 2 weeks I hit like 50-mile weeks where I was being serious. And then I then went into like my first 100-mile week. And then after that, I was done. I was like tired and I'm like, how the heck am I going to do this? Like for a whole training block. And then, you know, I would hammer workouts like crazy. I would do double runs, try to get like 15 miles a day, and it just wasn't healthy. You know, injuries caught up to me, and then it ultimately led to, you know, having to sit out a lot of times. You know, I would train for races, and then, you know, I would get injured a lot and I wouldn't be able to run those races. So I guess it would just be patience.
Hard training plans like that are not feasible for the long run unless you build up to them. And you know, one of the things that stick with me, I can't remember what book I was reading, but if you wake up in the morning and your eyes are puffy and tired, watery, your brain is tired. If you wake up in the morning and you got like a runny nose, then your body is tired. And that is one of the things that I try to pay attention to every morning. So just a little fun tidbit along the same lines. Question number five, name one thing positive happening in your life right now.
Not being injured. That's a positive. You know, I guess just like, I guess where I'm at right now compared to, I guess, like where I was at previously, you know, like now I kind of have like an open mind of where I want to go. And I guess like a vision. And I think that's important to have. Just, I guess, a mix of that and then just not being injured.
Definitely. Trust me. I came off of a long injury, which actually led up to, you know, this year and everything, and a break from the podcast, and it's finally coming back together. But yeah, being off injury is definitely a blessing. Hey, that was the Fast Five. Thank you for those answers. And now, Brandon, aka Mr. Navahoka, please introduce yourself to us.
Yate she Brandon Duga Yinishe, Kitlachini Nishle, Tachini Bashachin, Torichini Deshache, Kiani Deshanella. So hello everybody, my name is Brandon Dugay, and I'm from the Navajo Nation, born and raised in northern Arizona. I grew up in Lachi, Arizona. I was born in Tuba City, Arizona, and I call northern Arizona home. Growing up and living in this area, exploring this area for as long as I could remember, and
Hey, thank you for that introduction. Simply amazing, Brandon. Hey, before we continue, I want to go back and revisit just one of your Fast Five answers. when it comes to races? Do you prefer medals, buckles, challenge coins, or the experience? We've already kind of alluded to it, but, you know, we both said that we cherish the experience of it. That being said, have you seen the crazy Mountain 100 belt buckles?
The race? The actual race?
Belt buckle that they come out with, the finisher belt buckle for the Crazy Mountain 100.
I have not, no. That is one thing I haven't seen. I'll have to take a look.
Yeah, trust me. The belt buckle, they're simply amazing. It's like the equivalent to the embroidered Pendleton jacket you get for like first place at the co-ed basketball tournament or something.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Like it's simply amazing. It's like something the uncle wants to wear to the powwow.
yeah for sure. That's so
sweet. Oh, but no, check those out. Long story short, yes, I know we cherish, you know, the journey and everything, but there's some of those belt buckles that just give you those chills and to make you want to try harder. For me, that was the one that did it for me. Like, I had to go back and get it. So, yeah, you definitely need to check that one out, Brandon.
Yeah, for sure. It's like wearing that Pendleton jacket, you know, when you go out. It's like, yeah, check out my jacket. Pull the buckle out. Is that kind of how it is?
That's exactly how it is. Go line dancing with that one.
Yeah, for sure. I got to check that out.
Yeah, that's the kind of buckle that makes me want to tuck in my shirt, you know?
Yeah. Because, I mean, I've seen a bunch of, like, 100-mile buckles, and some of them are, like, you know, they're, like, kind of small. Like
just yes!
Like, it's like, all right. Okay, so with me, we'll probably get into this later on.
Yeah, come on.
But, you know, before running or anything, you know, middle school and high school, I rodeoed. I was a bull rider. I rode bulls. And and a lot of people don't know. I don't talk about that now.
Well, we're here, Brandon. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. So, you know, I used to do that back in the day. And, you know, the rodeo buckles are big. You know, when you win an event, you get either money, and then most of the time it's the big buckles, and they're pretty big. So, you know, like, that's what I knew what a buckle was. And then you know, when I got into the running, I heard about the 100-milers and how, you know, you finish, you get a buckle, and I'm like, that's pretty sick. And then I see the buckles they give out, some of them. I see some of the buckles they give out. I'm like, what is that?
Right?
That's like, that's pretty small.
I'm telling you, you know, there's some races that I've ran where, you know, you finish and you get that buckle. It's just like, oh, thanks, man. Like, I paid all that money for, you know, like this. Give me one second, Brad. Let me show you this.
Yeah. Take your time.
12 seconds later.
So this is it. Right there.
Oh, wow. Okay, so rodeo buckle. That is what a rodeo buckle looks like.
Right?
That's what a 100-mile buckle should look like right there.
That is the Crazy Mountain 100 belt buckle right there.
And, all right, you know what? I got to look into this race. Seriously.
Oh,
I
hey,
need a
Brandon.
Buckle like that. Look at the turquoise on the side.
Look at that, right?
The feathers, the design. Oh, man.
All right, Brandon. Trust me. You look into it.
Yeah,
you want
I'm looking into it.
If you want in, I got you, bro.
Sweet. Dude, that buckle's sick.
Right? I'm gonna snap a picture, and I'm going to send it to you. And when you say go, we're going to get you in there, okay?
I'm putting that up on the wall.
All right.
When I wake up in the morning, I'll be like, I need that buckle.
Yes! Yeah. Trust me. It is that race that I start training for, and I got, you know, I had this Achilles tendon injury. It sidelined me. It put me in this mindset like, you know, I'm going back and I'm getting that. And I dedicated literally 8 months of training, just 100%, no podcast. Getting back online to get that and everything. It's it is like my prized possession right now. So,
nice.
Trust me, I want to help you get there. You just let us know how we can help you, Brandon.
Okay. Awesome. Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, it's something that I'll definitely be looking forward to and wanting to do. Check off the list for sure.
Definitely. Yeah, we're here for you. Hey, but I think we kind of got off track with this beautiful Crazy Mountain 100 belt buckle. Bulls. You used to ride bulls.
Yeah, I used to ride. Yeah. So my family is pretty big into like the rodeo. My dad, his side of the family, they kind of did that. And then, yeah, kind of just back home, there's a lot of rodeos and just single bull riding events that go on. And I've been around that, I guess, just at a young age with friends. They were doing it. And then it led on to, oh, yeah, you should come over. We have a practice going on. And I'm like, all right, sweet. So I go there and, I get the bug, and then I want to get on. I get on, and the adrenaline is what gets me. I'm just like, holy smokes, what did I just go through? It's something that, I don't know, you have to do it to know and realize, like because no one will know. You know you're getting on a bull, there's, especially when you, for the first time, it's like there's nerves immediately.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of like trying to be calm in those moments because you have to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the animal knows when you're nervous. Yeah. The animal knows when you're scared. So keeping yourself calm to where when you do get on the bull, preparing to open the gate, it's all calm. And that's one thing that I really, enjoyed about it. Long story short, I got into to bull riding and went to a bunch of events all year, and kind of like traveled around with my dad at the time because I was, still young. We did like the junior rodeo events out here. But then one thing I noticed was I was, getting injured a lot. I was, injuries came with it. I broke my arm, and then I had a lot of injuries, I guess, going through that. But one injury really pulled me back a bit and was like, all right, we got to kind of take some time off. And then that's when I kind of, ultimately got into running. I found running to try to stay in shape in a way. And then, I guess to stay in shape for bull riding. And then I was like, I'm going to just go out and do a 10K like race that's going on the reservation. And then that's where I was like, all right, we got to do this because we got to dive more into the competitive side of running. Because I've always ran, I always ran like in the mornings and the evenings.
Yeah.
Just throughout my younger days, running is a tradition. It is part of who we are as Navajo people. Yeah. So I always ran, but it was never like to compete or to train for a race. But after the whole rodeo bull riding kind of scene, that's where I kind of took running seriously as far as wanting to train for races, wanting to do races, and wanted to just explore more with my feet. So
that's amazing. But I gotta throw something in there. It's a little bit of a tidbit, maybe a best kept secret, if you will. It's funny we're talking about rodeo now because out of my whole family, I'm the only one who is not a cowboy. I'm the only one who didn't stay with, the family tradition of continuing rodeo and everything. My family, we actually have a rodeo every Mother's Day in Montana and everything. So it's been going on for so many years. It's just a part of our life. But, I was, like I said, I was the one who didn't stick with it. However, I can relate to having those nerves getting ready to get on a bull. I have never once rode for a full 8 seconds on a bull. I would say in that moment, you probably think you're probably about a good 5 or 6 seconds in. In reality, you're like 2 or 3. Time just slows down. I've tried a couple bulls in my life. I don't miss it. I would rather do like the rhinestone cowboy thing and, do the mechanical bull or whatever they call it, the fair.
the fair mechanical bull, yeah.
Have you ever stuck a bull for a full 8 seconds?
Yeah, I have. A lot in practice.
All right.
And yeah, and just even in like events I have, but, with the events, a lot of the events, you have the long go around and then you have the short go around. Short go around is like the championship round. So, like it would always be, you ride, you get to the short go, and then like you either don't ride or you ride. And a lot of times, like, it was like a mix of both. Yeah. Just because those bulls are at another level. Yeah. They're championship bulls. So like, I've ridden a lot. Oh, and then another thing I did as well was, you know, after the bull riding a bit, I moved off a little more towards like saddle bronc.
Because, really?
Yeah. So my dad's side of the family, like my uncles, a few of them rode broncs.
Okay.
And, they were pretty good. And, you know, when I was riding bulls, they would come up to me and they would be like, "Hey, you should try saddle bronc." Like, it's like trying to push me more towards that.
Yeah.
So I did that a few times. You know, where I live, I'm not too far from Utah, and Utah's pretty big into the rodeo scene.
Yeah.
Saddles were like something that I tried for a bit, and it was something that, I'm not gonna lie, I'd probably get back into. You know, you don't have as many injuries as for, say, like bull riding, but the broncs are pretty cool. So
wow. So wait, no, this is maybe a part of your plan to move back into it?
It probably wouldn't be a part of my plan, but like, just say if like, all right, we're gonna chill with the running, I'll probably like get back into like some broncs. I would lean more into that.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. So
now we're talking about rodeo. Last question I have about it is, just like every runner has their own style, we wear certain clothing, shoes, certain gear that we live by as runners. That being said, as a rodeo professional, did you have certain things that you did? Did you wear certain gear, or were you just kind of, let's grab my gear and let's go. Let's go ride this bull. Let's go ride this bronc.
So like, we have our gear. So like, when I rode bulls, I still have it today, but my gear bag, it's literally like a duffel bag, or it could be like a suitcase. Like, a lot of times,
yeah,
you'd walk around with a suitcase, or like a suitcase that turned into a bag. Anyways, you put your chaps in there, you put your bull rope, you put your bull riding vest in there. Just everything you need to ride a bull, your glove, the rosin that makes makes it sticky with your hand. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that's one thing I had with me, of course. To be honest, I feel like that was it. You know, I didn't really need a lot, but one thing I did do a little differently that I didn't really see was I always carried around like a foam roller. Like, that was one thing that was just a little different that I didn't see. Like, the other bull riders, they would go to the bull riding and they'd just be like, "Let's go, let's get on." Like, they'll stretch you'll see a rider stretch every now and then. But like me, I was over here with like a yoga mat, like stretching out. Like, I don't want to like mess anything up too bad, you know? So,
did you have a signature way of saying outside, or letting the gate guard know that you're ready to
I just said like, "Let's go." But then I kind of like, one thing with me that, you know, like my dad and my uncles really instilled were like, whatever you do, don't take your time in the shoot. That was one thing that like they always told me. Don't waste your time, because, you know, you'll see riders every now and then, they'll be on the bull and they're just like, you don't know if they're scared or if they're just like taking their time. And then, you know, then the animal gets restless. It's just not bad. So like, for me, it was like just in and out, you know, don't waste your time in there. You just get in and out. So it was really quick for me. And that's one thing that I try to do. And it was just, let's go.
All right.
Nod.
There you go. I got one more rodeo question before we move into running. So I need you to give me one song that you listen to when you're a cowboy, when you're a rodeo cowboy.
Oh, man.
Come on, give me one. Geez. You got to give me just one.
Shoot. It would probably be, there's one that I've been on recently.
Yeah.
Much Too Young.
Oh!
Garth
Brooks?
Garth Brooks, yeah.
Yes!
But that would just be because I've been on it lately, and I just recently got back from a trip from Nashville with family, and we went to, you know, the whole the Grand Opera, and I got to listen to country for a good week and a half. So
that's good. You know, it's crazy because that song right there. So we all know how you can just literally just download any music you want at any time. I use an iPhone, but Garth Brooks is one of those artists that you can't find on iTunes. So I literally had to buy the CDs and upload those into my computer. Now that is how I have them on my running playlist. But that is actually one of my running songs right there.
Nice. So you know what's so funny you say about that? Like I have Spotify, and I look up, you know, Garth Brooks, and that song, they have it, but it's like a weird version. And I'm like, I have to literally go on YouTube and listen to like the actual version.
Yeah,
it's him singing, but it's just a different time when he sang it, and I'm just like, I don't like this. So like when I want to hear it, I'll go on YouTube and I'll just like I'll play it because I know that the instruments are right. And the way he sings is just perfect. So I'm like, okay, this is the one I'm looking for.
Hey, you said earlier that hometown. Hopefully I'm going to say this right. You said Lecce.
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 Yeah.
Arizona.
Lecce. Yeah.
Okay. In researching your homeland and everything, I've come to realize how beautiful the area is and how close you are to so many amazing places. There's Lake Powell, Antelope Canyon. There's probably so many more that I'm missing, but one of the ones that I have a soft spot for is the Grand Canyon. And that's all in your backyard.
Yeah. No, all those areas you named are literally within like maybe 5 to 10 minutes. The Grand Canyon's about an hour and a half, maybe.
That is crazy. Hey, before I ask you these questions, you tell me something interesting that you find about your area.
Something I find interesting about the area I live in? I guess it would just be how, you know, how different the landscape changes so much. And that's one thing that, you know, I try to take in a lot. Sometimes, you know, you live in an area long enough, you're just like, oh, it's home. But then to other people, they're like, holy crap, like, why aren't you out exploring? Why aren't you out doing this? And I'm like, yeah, you know, you're kind of right.
Yeah,
you know, like you got to have the outsiders come in and tell you for you to realize. But it would just probably be the vastness and the different landscape and the different terrain you see within a matter of like 10 to 20 minutes. I mean, the Slot Canyons, you're down in the ground, literally 800 feet below the ground, looking at sandstone walls have eroded for thousands and thousands, millions of years, I should say.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you go up the hill and then, you know, you're looking down into a canyon that leads to the Grand Canyon. And it's just like, it changes so much. You know, there's sandstone, there's sand dune sand, there's the clay we have out here. So it all changes so much. And I think that's one thing that's really interesting about where I live is, you know, there's a lot to work with. So.
Hey, you know, you hit it, the nail on the head when you were talking about, you know, outsiders telling you about your hometown or being away for so long that you have to be away to realize what you don't have anymore. And that is exactly my take on where I'm at now. So I live in, the listeners are probably like, oh, this story again. But I live in Southeast Texas. My whole life, I grew up in the mountains of Montana. And I never knew what I had until I moved away. And then now I'm like, oh, man. So like all these great trails and elevation that I had access to my whole life, I had to move away to realize, hey, now you don't have that. You want to see it? You know, go take a vacation now. And I'm just like, it's crazy. So no, I have that same sentiment with you. So hey, Brandon, why is it important in the Navajo culture to wake up and run east?
So, you know, we were always taught growing up by, you know, our family, our elderly, that, you know, you wake up before the sun rises and you pray to the east and then you run to the east. To us, you know, that's where our creator, the gods are out. That's that time of when they're awake, and that's when you should be awake, and you should be letting them know that you're outside and that you're moving. You run to the east to meet them. Mother Earth and Father Sky, you know, they're the ones that are out, and yeah, you know, you gotta be up, ready to greet them. And yeah, that's kind of what we were taught, and it's something that we still do in practice today. So
that's amazing. Hey, on your Instagram, there's a picture of you tying your shoes. The camera looks like it's at the ground level. In the photo, you're silhouetting the doorway, and there's some, like, amazing natural light behind you. The picture is simply amazing, but something that stood out to me in this picture was that the floors were dirt. Can you give us a little bit of insight into this photo?
Yeah. So that photo is from, you know, back where it kind of all started for me. That's out on the reservation, kind of towards the Little Colorado River.
Okay.
And that's where my dad is from. That hogan is where he grew up in, and he lived in with all his siblings, and that's a hogan where I grew up and was raised around as well. You know, back when my Nelly lady, she was still alive, you know, that hogan was like that was the hogan, I guess you could say. That's and home. It's like a traditional hogan, you know, the dirt floors, like you were saying. Yeah. It's a little small. And then in the middle you have a fire pit, or like a stove with a chimney going up to the top. But yeah, that's home, you know, that's where it all started for me. And, I enjoy going back there quite often. And, it's just a place that, you know, has a lot of meaning to me. It's really quiet. Definitely. It's about maybe eight miles off the main road. And then once you get there, you know, there's nobody for miles and miles away. No running water, no electricity, which is perfect. Speaking of that, I was literally just there yesterday or last night.
Really?
Yeah. That's I was out cool. there, and it was just that's just an amazing place. You know, if I want to go there, if I want to go to a place to reset, to just calm things down, you'll find me out there.
Wow, I mean,
it's such a beautiful and special place.
That's awesome, man. Hey, so your younger brother, he's a runner too, right?
Yeah, Tanner. Yeah.
So does Tanner get his running abilities and motivation from you, or is it a family tradition?
I would say a little bit of both. I don't want to like say he got it all from me. If anything, you know, Tanner started running before me.
What?
Yeah, so he started back in middle school. Like,
oh, okay.
And like sixth grade, it was just something he wanted to do. And because his friends were doing it, and, you know, we all encouraged him, you know, like, go ahead, go for it. And then,
yeah,
he did a lot of the running. I got into it shortly after him. And then that's where, as far as competing wise, that's where I got into it. And then, you know, I think we kind of feed off of each other. You know, like it's nice to have him there, because, you know, when we run together, it's like there's no slacking off. Like, you know, we're running together. It's like, all right, you better be in it today or else you're getting dropped. Or and it just keeps you honest and keeps you like on the right track.
Right.
Because sometimes I'll do some training. A lot of the times I'll do some training on my own. And it's just hard sometimes to calculate, you know, like, if you're being honest with yourself or not. But when I run with him, especially now, you know, he's just coming off of his cross country season. So he's pretty fit. And I'm like, damn, dude, like we're doing a casual, normal 7 mile run at like 6:30 pace, 6:20. Wow. And it's just like, yeah, this is the normal run. I'm like, holy crap. All right.
Let's go. That is pretty cool. Hey, so let's move into Brandon, the athlete. I think we got a good description of who you are as a person. Let's now move into Brandon, the athlete. But before we continue, give us your Instagram handle so we can like, follow, and support you.
Yeah, so I have two Instagram accounts. The first one is Brandon_Dewguy, and that's my adventure photography, you know, platform. That's where if you want to see my photography and artwork and kind of dive more into that world where I talk about, you know, the adventures I go on and kind of just share that side more, you can follow me there. And then Brandon_Runs, that's more of the running journal, the running side to my, you know what I do, because, you know, it's, I was doing all in one.
Yeah.
And I noticed a lot of people weren't liking it. I was getting a lot of people unfollowing me on my main account because they're like, you're supposed to be a photographer. You're supposed to be sharing photography. And then I got a bunch of people that were like, oh, you should post more of your workouts. You should post more like your running side. I'm like, you know what? Let's just make both. Let's just make two accounts. It's a bit harder, but yeah, those are the two accounts.
Well, since we're going to move into this already, for everybody out there listening, Brandon actually paced me on the third lap. Was it the third lap?
This is the third loop, yeah.
At the Javelina 100 this year, which is 2023. But yeah, so during that time, I was actually getting to the point to where I'm just like, you know how we get, just like, oh, I want to go home. Like, this heat beat me down. Legs just don't have it right now. But I met you, I believe, after the second lap.
Yeah.
And, you know, you said hi, introduced yourself, immediately start helping out as a crew member. And then once I left, you know, I had another 20 miles to go before I'd see you again. But in that time, you were doing your self-study, you know, talking with the other crew members, seeing how I needed support, like what is my best practices and everything like that. Can you kind of give us a little bit of insight how you do this? Like, what are your best practices in order to learn the people you are pacing?
Yeah. So, yeah, when I got there, I actually only knew and met maybe two people, which are Annette and Deshauna. Those are the only two people I knew, but Annette was the only one there and Deshauna was not there. Yeah. She was grinding out there on the course as well. But you know, Annette was there and I think she ran off to go grab some, she went to the store or something like that.
Yeah.
And then you were going to be coming in and it's just good to get to know the runner. Get to know how they are, who they are, and then get to know the crew members as well. I think that's really important. And to see how we can help that individual, which was you, to see how I can help you the best I could whenever you come in. You know, and that's, what does he want to hear? What does he not want to hear? That's the most important one.
Right.
What does he like? What doesn't he like? Because I don't want to do things that you don't like, especially when you're trying to run 100 miles. So
yeah,
it's just getting a little closer to you and to the crew members, because, you know, the closer you are to them, the easier it'll be.
Right.
And so something that I've learned just either being a part of a crew or crewing other runners at different races, that's something that I took away, was getting to know them a little more. And of course, I never met you, but before you were running, coming in, I was talking to the crew members like, who is this guy? How is he? What is he like? What is he not like? And just, what does he have? What do you guys have in the ice chest? What do you guys don't have? All right, he needs this, he needs that. And trying to do my study before I get to actually meet you when you came in. Yeah.
Well, it was, first of all, thank you for doing it and everything. You know, you got to do the one lap before, you know, Hoka put you right back to work. So, you know, like I said, thank you for that. Your pacing duties, the studying that you did beforehand really did help me and everything. And trust me, I felt like I crushed it. And there's an amazing picture of you on the website. If you haven't seen it yet, you better go check that out.
Actually, I should check that out, man.
Yeah. So actually, for those who are going to be watching on this on YouTube, I'm going to throw that up there. But that was only me you paced. Give us some other runners that you have paced, and because I know you have some amazing stories of other runners and other races that you've paced.
Yeah. So I've paced a good buddy of mine. His name is Randolph Curley. I paced him in the Antelope Canyon 100 when he did that.
Yeah.
And that was pretty sweet. You know, I got to hop in about 27, almost 30 miles with him.
Yeah.
So I got to pace him through that, and it was back home, you know, back in the homeland. So it was just awesome to see. And I probably wouldn't run the 100 yet, but I'd probably run the 50K or the 50 miler at Antelope Canyon Ultra. So it was nice to like actually kind of be a part of the course, you know, and see. And that's one thing, you know, I don't have a lot of experience in, like, you know, I haven't done a lot of races yet, but all of this pacing duty is for me. I'm studying. I'm not only pacing you, but I'm wanting to run Javelina. I was supposed to run Javelina.
Yeah.
The 100K. All of this is like gaining knowledge. So I'm like, okay, I know what to expect when I run this race.
Right.
So I go into it with two mindsets of like, okay, I'm pacing you. That's my main job. But then the second job is, okay, let's see what we're going to get ourselves into later on in the future. So I paced Randolph, in the 100. At Antelope Canyon, I paced my good buddy Hella, Hella Good on Instagram or YouTube, if anybody knows who he is.
Heck yeah.
Hella Sadiba. And I paced him at Western States 100 mile. So I paced him for about a good, I would say 30 miles as well. Yeah. And that was probably one of my first like big races I've ever paced, as far as like the running scene, trail running scene goes, because Western States is like the Super Bowl, I guess you can say. But so I paced him, and then I've been a part of, you know, different crews. I've got to crew Jared Hazen. He's a Solomon athlete now, and I got to crew him at Western States when he ran the 100 mile. I got to crew Hayden Hawks. He's a Hoka, a fellow Hoka athlete.
Yeah.
I got to crew him at Western States. And Jim Walmsley, I haven't crewed him yet, but I've been a part of, like, you know, when he was at Western States, when he was at UTMB, when he won just this past UTMB. I was there kind of in the beginning, and kind of like got to see like the preparation and followed him the whole race. Yeah, it was amazing, and just getting all this knowledge from some of these like elite athletes like Hayden, Jared, and Jim. I've learned a lot, and I try to apply those to, you know, crewing and just pacing. You know, you know, my friends, and you included, try to do the best I could, because it could get a little hectic. So,
You know, like, one of the things that I took away from it was, I used your footsteps, like where you stepped, I knew it was safe.
Yeah.
And so like I was staying one step behind you. So when your foot would leave, my foot was getting, you know, in the same area and everything, not only because I knew it was safe. Snakes, and his dang tarantulas, like
the tarantula. Yeah.
Oh my god! I swear to God, if you shine your light onto the sides and you just see thousand little tiny lights, but those little lights are thousand little tiny eyes.
Yeah,
and I'm just like, I did my best. Hey, real quick before I forget, when we were running and you were pacing me, we're going into, I think, almost the last aid station before the finish, and you were just like nonchalant, and we saw this big train of people, and then you're like, hey, we're coming up on Courtney DeWalter, and then you're just like, you passed her and you're like, hey Courtney, you know, and she was just like, hey, how's it going? And like, I got so nervous, I swear. Like, I'm like, okay, like, hi, Miss Courtney.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is so nerdy. But I was doing my best to not be starstruck.
Yeah.
But I was just like, wow. Like, she's right there. You know, like, I reach over and high five her and everything. But I'm trying to, like, put my best foot forward and, like, look, I'm a runner too.
You know?
But, yeah, that was pretty cool, man.
No, yeah, it was that was awesome to see Courtney out there. That was, it was pretty cool.
And it was funny how, like, she was in the middle. But there was like
10 people in front of her and like 10 people behind her, you know, like magically they have this pace, you know, right with her, you know?
Yeah. They were all, you know, when we got done with that, I sat down and I was like thinking like, you know what? Those people were like probably just trying to say they ran with Courtney for a bit or trying to like talk to her, like just pick her brain. I'm like, yeah, there was a big train both ways.
Yeah, definitely.
She was in the middle. But talking about the tarantula, you know, it was so funny when we were running, we were talking about that.
Yeah.
We're like, man, we haven't seen a tarantula yet. And then like literally a mile, we like went over this hill and I'm like, oh damn, there's a tarantula right there.
Yeah. Oh man.
That's so funny.
Hey, before we get into speaking about Hoka and all that stuff like that, I want to speak about a different company, Naked Sports Innovations.
Yeah.
As an athlete for Naked Sports Innovations, you help the Navajo community. You set up a fund to support traditional Navajo farming and make it easier to acquire water for the livestock. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is kind of during the time of like COVID, you know, when things were really bad. Naked was, you know, Naked's an amazing company. You know, they make, if many of you don't know, they make the running belts, probably the best running belt out there. People always ask, hey, how do you carry your phone when you run? Or how do you carry your gels? Like, I'll do a half marathon or a full marathon and I won't have a vest. And they'll be like, what are you carrying? Where are you carrying your nutrition? And I'm like, I just lift my shirt up a bit. I'm like right there. And the Naked belts are awesome. So Naked, they make the running belts. You know, they were a company that reached out to me and loved my story. I love what I was trying to do. And they wanted to support as much as they could. So them, along with a few other companies, you know, I sat down with them and said, you know, I'm going to do this like GoFundMe. And kind of like help raise money for families that live on the reservation that don't have water tanks. Because, you know, you need water tanks to have water out on the reservation. And a lot of people use water tanks to wash hands, you know, wash their dishes, and even wash themselves. And the more water tanks you have, you know, you're set out there off the grid. So yeah, we had this like GoFundMe where we raised money and all that money went to water tanks for different families out on the reservation. And Naked was a big company that, you know, had a big impact on that. So,
wow, that's amazing. So I'm going to say this on behalf of the Navajo Nation. Thank you for doing that for them.
Yeah.
Definitely amazing.
Yeah. And then, you know, and that's one thing that like it stopped, of course, because of COVID, but that's something that I still want to continue. I haven't talked about it yet, but it's definitely something I'm going to work on. Is to continue, you know, raising money for different families with water tanks. Because I still today drive all over the reservation and I'm like, dang, like, people need help. People don't have enough or they don't have the right kind of water tanks, I guess you can say, to keep themselves going. And my goal, end goal is to just try to help my people out as much as I can. And
yeah, definitely.
That's one thing that I just want to keep doing. So,
Matt, I love that already. We'll talk offline about, you know, this venture and everything, and we'll see if we can help each other out with this one.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, so let's move into Hoka One One. How did this venture with Hoka come about?
Yeah, so this is like when I made that decision to make a running account.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? I'm going to go all in on this running account, just post all running stuff. Did a post, introduce myself. This is who I am. I'm running now and trying to compete and just trying to share my story of running, the Navajo way of how we look at running, because, you know, everyone looks at running differently.
Right.
And yeah, you know, I bought a pair of Hokas and I was like, man, these shoes are freaking amazing.
Right.
I mean, there's so much cushion, light, breathable, and that's just something that I needed. especially like on long adventures. So wore Hokas, and then I started tagging them in a bunch of my posts, and
yeah,
was just running in places back or running in places at home, you know, with cool landscapes. And a lot of the landscapes are just literally the trails we have. I mean, people think I go out to a certain spot and just like, all right, we're going to get a running shot of this beautiful
right.
scene. But it's like, that's literally where I'm running yeah. all the time. And they heard about my story and when what I was doing, and they wanted to kind of dip their feet into, you know, what they can do. And yeah, you know, I told them my story, who I am, what I'm trying to do, my goal. And one thing led to another. It was just like, all right, let's make a film about you. So they did, and it's called yeah. Time to Hejon. And that was a big one of the bigger projects I've ever done. I mean, I've never been on a film where it yeah. was about me. Like, if anything, I always, as a photographer, I was always like behind the camera. So for yeah. it to be, all right, you're the one that we're videoing and taking pictures of, I was like,
here's a sample of the video.
My grandmother in Navajo would say, "Ah, which means if it's up to anybody, it's up to you. You have a choice in life, whether it's positive or negative. It's nobody's fault but yours. Growing up on the reservation, we were always taught to wake up in the morning and start your day off with a run and greet the Creator. You want to be up when the sun is rising, showing the Creator that you're not laying down, you're not being lazy. Some Navajos, they'll get up and they'll yell real loud to let the Creator know we're awake. We're here, and we will always be here.
But yeah, so, you know, we did that film, and we shot all of it, you know, in areas that I grew up in.
Yeah.
And in places that have a good meaning and a good place in my heart. So
that's amazing. And yeah, so, I'll let you know, like, before I've ever met you, like, I did watch that, and I can't tell you how many times I watched it. It's simply amazing, man.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was awesome. It was definitely a cool piece. But, you know, looking at it now, it's so like to the punch, just like in and out.
Yeah.
I feel like there is a lot more.
We can expand on it.
We can expand. And I'm like trying to get to either Hoka or like maybe another company. Like there's like, I have this idea. I have this vision
yeah.
of kind of making it a little longer,
yeah.
maybe 4 or 5 minutes longer, but yeah. there's so much more juice that we can,
wow.
we have. And I mean, like after watching it, to be honest, I've only watched it once after that.
Really?
Because I know what we
do. The ceiling's higher for you.
Yeah. So I'm just like, I've only watched it once. And I'm like, I don't, after watching it, knowing what we did, I'm like, there's so much more we can do. There's
yeah.
so much more we can tell
wow.
people about. Because people see that video, that film, and they're like, a lot of people come up to me and they're like, you know, like that means a lot. But I'm like,
yeah.
that's the best, you know, to hear. But I'm like, there's so much more.
Yeah. That's
that
amazing.
Could be told.
Yeah. Like I said, we'll talk offline. Like,
yeah.
Let me see if there's any way that I can help you
yeah.
expand this idea and everything. Like, now you got me excited. Heck yes.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. But yeah.
yeah.
So we did the film, and then I got on board with them, you know, afterwards.
Yeah.
And then ever since then, I've been with Hoka as a like a global athlete ambassador, I guess you can
yeah.
say. And I do work for them and helping just be the best advocate ambassador for them,
yeah.
but through my shoes, I guess you can say.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's one thing I try to do a lot is I try to do things a little differently. I try to do things like sharing my content, but out in the desert, because that's just different. I mean, you don't see a lot of people running in like canyons or,
yeah,
doing workouts like in beautiful places. So yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty cool to kind of like mix a little bit of where I'm from and literally where I'm living.
Yeah, so. Definitely. And man, Brandon, you just said trying to be the best through my shoes. Bro, that is,
yeah,
that's a motto right there, man. I love it. Man, that is awesome. All right. Hey, so I know you got probably so many stories that will live with you for a lifetime. Can you give us some of the most experiences that stick out in your mind through Hoka's ventures?
The film, definitely. You know, yeah. like it was definitely it was a long and almost like a stressful process. One thing that people don't know about that film is, you know, we were wanting it to be a, you know, spring kind of vibe, yeah. Living on the in the desert on the reservation. The weather changes so much. First day raining, second day raining, third day we woke up, we were at the Hogan where my you know, where I grew up, and we woke up the next morning and we were covered in snow and we're just like, oh my gosh, like everybody was like, we gotta do something. We either gotta extend this or we just gotta work with this. And there was a lot of phone calls that were going on literally on set, trying to be like, all right, wow. What are we gonna do? Like, are we just gonna push along with this? Are we gonna extend maybe another week to see if the snow melts? And we end up just working with it. And it came out really nice, but yeah, just that whole experience. But also one thing that, you know, really sits in my heart and will for a long time is the experience not that I had, but the people that were there on the set.
Wow. But
because they have never been to the reservation, they've never seen this kind of landscape. So for me and my family to show them where we're from and what we see and what, you know, what we see as home.
Yeah.
It's just, you see their eyes and their mouth drop. Wow. And they're just amazed. And they're just like, I don't know how we can shoot this. Like, it's so hard because there's just so much to shoot. Or,
yeah,
you know, showing them our culture. You know, we make blue corn mush for them. We made Navajo tea for them. We, you know, had them sleep in a Hogan. We had them go outside and chop wood and bring it into the Hogan and showed them like, all right, now you guys got to heat up the Hogan. And they're like, oh, it's cold. And we're like, all right, you got to go outside and chop some wood because that's the only way you're going to get warm.
Wow.
And, you know, giving them that experience meant a lot. It means a lot. And even to this day, you know, I try to do that with a bunch of my friends, a bunch of my running friends. You know, I'll take them out to the reservation and I'll show them, you know, the Rez way of life, I guess you can say.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bro, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, and you also recently went to, I'm going to mess this up, Chamonix?
Yeah, you got it right. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you got it right.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I went to Chamonix back during the UTMB. Hoka invited me out, and they wanted me to be just kind of to experience it. You know, UTMB is – there's a few races I have on my radar that I want to do before I stop running, and one of them is UTMB. So to be there for a whole week and a half and to enjoy – you know, the ultra spirit of what UTMB is. It was amazing. Yeah. And you know, that trip definitely made me appreciate, you know, what we have back home. It's just a different landscape, but the people, the way they live, especially outside of Chamonix, like if you go more into the smaller villages, it reminded me of home.
Wow.
It's just the landscape's different. They have mountains, we don't. They have snow, they have all this rain, we don't. But the way they live is literally would be like a spitting image of how the Navajo people live. You know, that you go into the deep, smaller villages, it's hard to find someone who speaks English.
Wow.
You know, it's like they go out, they're constantly chopping wood to stay warm. They're outside herding sheep, you know, living the old way.
Yeah.
And I mean, they love it. You know, they don't want to go into the touristy towns, and, you know, they love their small village. And that's something that, you know, like, was like, man, this reminds me of home. You know, you go out to the deep res, and, you know, you'll meet a family that, or a group of people that don't speak much English.
Right.
No running water, no electricity, and just living that old school way. And that's something that was like, yeah, I was like, man, this is cool.
That is, oh man, I'll tell you, that is something that I would like to experience. But like, through your photography, like, you're able to share these amazing stories. And like you mentioned a little bit earlier about your film, like, it is so short and compact, but like, there is more that you can add to it. And I think you do that well through your Instagram accounts.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, it's nice to hear that, because I'm going to be honest, there's times where I'm like, that's not enough. like the week I had in Chamonix was like, not enough. Like, I want to go back there for at least a month or two.
Yeah.
Or even more, multiple trips, and explore more of that area and kind of dive into that culture a little more, because there's definitely a lot more to learn and a lot more to see. So,
yeah, that's awesome, man. Hey, speaking of Hoka, do you have a favorite shoe now?
Probably be the Tecton X2.
Yes.
That's my shoe right there. I wear that shoe all the time. I mean,
yeah. It's funny you say that, because you wore that pacing me, right?
I did, yeah.
And I think that's how we started the conversation. But so when it came out earlier, I believe this year, well, I got my pair earlier this year, and we went to Santa Fe, I believe. Albuquerque. And so I was training for Crazy Mountain 100, but I was running up and down the trails there. Using that shoe, I realized, like, my feet, they didn't feel all the rocks, and the trails over there were pretty arduous. And so right off the bat, like, that caught my attention, and I enjoyed that about the shoe. I used that same shoe and I ran the Crazy Mountain 100. Now, traditionally, I will change shoes about halfway. This one, I literally was able to keep it on the whole race, the whole 100 miles, in and out of water, across, you know, all this crazy terrain. So I've kind of started living by that shoe. So when it got to, they start getting a little bit worn right before Javelina. And so during Javelina's expo, I just bought a brand new pair the day before. No break-in period. Literally, I put the shoe on, and that is what I ran Javelina 100 in, a brand new pair of Hokas out of the box. Tecton X2. Love that shoe. I hope they don't change anything about it.
Yeah. No, that shoe is amazing. You know, when I first started running, like many people, you know, the Speed Goat, that's like that's like Hoka's shoe, trail shoe. Yeah. You talk about Hoka's, you can't go out with the Speed Goats. But once they came out with the Tecton X, the first edition, I'm like, holy smokes, this is insane. And then it just gets better and better and better. It gets lighter. I'm excited to see the future in what Hoka does with the Tecton X line, or just really any of their shoes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing to see how quick they've, you know, rebounded on like the shoes they used to make and how they're making shoes now. Like it's amazing. And I've actually got to see some of the future to some of these shoes, especially the Tecton X kind of edition. And yeah.
Well, that was actually
going to be
my next question, because there's we talked about it during, you know, your pacing duties during Javelina, but you were letting me know about a cross shoe that they have coming. And then I think a week or two later, I saw it on your Instagram account. Is that the one with the gator built in?
So the one I just posted on my Instagram, that's actually just like a... That was a signature kind of like Mafate, the speed Mafate, but it was like a cross with a designer And that was kind of, that's her shoe design.
Okay.
So, and it has a gator, and that's like an amazing shoe. But that is not the one I'm talking about. The one I'm talking about is another version of Tectonix, or the Tecton series, I guess you can say.
Yeah.
A bunch of pro athletes have kind of, they're running in prototypes of the shoe. Of course, the prototypes will change, but, you know, don't be surprised if you see a gator sock on a Tectonix or a Speedo in the future.
Heck yeah, that's awesome, man.
I mean, it's nice when you can run on trails and not have to worry about getting pebbles and rocks in your shoe.
Oh, heck yeah. Trust me, that is amazing. Hey, before we start wrapping things up, give us some insight about your photography ventures, all this stuff that you're doing.
Yeah. So right now I'm actually kind of getting back into my photography. I took a little break. Not like I wanted to take a break, but it was just, I found myself in a little funk a bit with photography, and just seeing how when I first started photography, it was like, okay, we're going to do this to share photos of my beautiful homeland. And then I kind of saw that, you know, a lot of people were doing it. I mean, like, everybody was just picking up a camera and traveling, which is amazing. But then I was kind of like, you know, I feel like I'm not, you know, in that world anymore. But then I had to take a step back and then realize, like, you know, I got to still share my story. I got to still share my perspective of photography as a Navajo, as an indigenous, because, you know, it's a lot different from a tourist taking pictures to someone that actually lives and is a part of a culture, you know. So got me back into just shooting a bunch of my homeland, and now I got that motivation to want to shoot more. So I'm doing a lot more with photography now, planning out routes of where I want to go throughout the weeks. And I'm excited. Like, really, like, I went from like, oh, I'm not going to take pictures this week, just worry about running. Now I'm like, all right, we're running. And then afterwards we're going to go explore this spot because we got to get this, you know? So I have that feeling of how I used to be when I first started. And
it's awesome.
It's amazing. So I'm excited.
Got to rekindle that flame, that excitement.
Yeah. And you know, like, I always forget sometimes that, like, I forget sometimes that, you know, like people follow me, one, for my photography, but two, because I'm like, I'm an indigenous creator, that is, and there's more, but there's not a lot of indigenous creators out there. So to just stop that would be like a big, I'm just being dishonest with myself, I guess. Yeah. But, I'm excited. You know, I got a bunch of plans to be in the Grand Canyon here in the next couple of months. The Grand Canyon is like my place. That's where you'll find me.
Yeah.
I love going down there exploring. I'll spend like hours and hours down there just running, and I'll see where this trail goes. Let's go over here.
That's cool.
Let's go down to the water. Let's jump in and then go back up. So, and then just really racing more. You know, I'm going to be doing the Black Canyon 100K.
Oh, that's right.
In February. So going to be kind of shifting more towards the 100K distance, doing longer adventure runs. I just recently got done with the Navajo Mountain Marathon just this past weekend. I haven't talked about it yet. But I probably will on my Instagram here.
All right. Sounds good. Well, if you want to give us a little bit of spoiler, we're all ears.
So, it was just like a last minute sign up. I knew the race was happening. I haven't done a race in a while. So I was like, you know what? Let's just see where we're at. And my little brother did the half. I did the full. Took it out to the start hard, of course.
Yeah.
And the Monument Valley Marathon, it's a trail marathon for people that don't know. You run through the park and then you run into the backcountry section, and it's all sand. All sand. There's no crazy runnable parts. I mean, in the beginning, maybe in the middle, but you know, me and another runner found ourselves just pushing the pace a bit, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go out with him and see what happens. And 4 or 5 miles in, I noticed we were going like sub 7-minute pace. So I'm like, all right, I guess we're just doing this thing. We're doing this. And
yeah,
you know, he dropped something out of his belt. He stopped. And then I'm like, okay, I'm in the lead. Ran for a bit. He caught back up with me. We hit the backcountry section together, like mile 13.
Yeah.
And we pulled away from everybody. And we were just like kind of just crisscrossing the whole time. Okay. And you know what was crazy? I wasn't listening. I don't listen to music when I race. He wasn't either. Uh-huh. We didn't talk at all.
Really?
We were side by side for 13 miles for an hour and 30 minutes. And we did not talk one word.
Wow.
I wanted to say something to him in the beginning. I wanted to be like, yo, man, like, where are you from? Like,
yeah.
How's it going? But I noticed early on he was serious. And I'm like, all right,
wow,
you're serious? Let's be serious then.
The competitive spirit.
Yeah, yeah. And then we were just back and forth. And it was funny, too, because, like, I would be running, and then I would pull out some nutrition. Like, I would start drinking from my bottle. And then he noticed, and he would do the same. And it was just, like, whenever we would hit, like, maybe, like, 30 minutes, it was just boom, boom, boom. And he was just... We were just copying each other the whole time. Anyways, we hit the backcountry section. It gets sandy for like 8 miles. It's just pure sand.
Yeah.
And he pulled away from me. Like, he had at least like 5 minutes on me. And I'm like, this guy is hammering. Wow. He's good for him. Like,
yeah.
I kind of eased off a bit. And then once we got off the sandy sections onto more runnable areas, I caught up to him. And I'm like, whoa, what the heck? And he was hitting a wall. He hit a wall so hard. I'm like he couldn't even run anymore. And I just like ran by him. I'm like, I was going to say good job, but then I was like, we're staying quiet. So we stayed quiet. We passed him. And,
oh man,
you know, got to mile 21. One of the aid station people were like, 4 miles to go. You got it. You got a 20-minute lead on everybody else. You're good to go. So I'm like, all right, sweet. You know, making my way back up to the finish line, 4 miles to go, and the legs gave out. Like, seriously, the legs did not – it hit immediately. The legs didn't want to work anymore. And I was running, trying to run. The pace slowed down tremendously. And I'm like, okay, 2 more miles to go. Turned around, looked back. Nobody. Let's keep moving.
Yeah.
We just hit this pace. I give it like 5 minutes. Some guy comes around. And he just pats me on the back. Good job, man. You guys went out hard and you're finishing strong.
Yeah.
And it's like this guy who was like in fourth place and he just like casually passes me. I'm like, damn.
Oh, wow.
It looks like I'm in second now. And then second place passes me. Third place passes me. Fourth place passes me. I hit a wall hard. Seriously. Like, I could not go anymore.
Yeah.
I finished in ninth overall. That's how bad I hit a wall. Wow. And I think I finished in like 4 hours in 7 minutes or five minutes or something like that. So yeah, it was definitely like something to like, you know, to really reflect on. Cause I'm like, all right, I know what I need to work on. I know I shouldn't go out too hard.
Right.
I mean, the kid that I went out with, he finished 30th place.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's how hard he hit a wall.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he ran like 5 hours. So yeah, when I finished, he still had another hour out there. But yeah, overall, it was amazing, you know.
Yeah,
Gave it my all, and I was honest, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna I want to push, like,
yeah,
I want to test myself, and that's what I did. So now I know where I am, and what I need to work on, which is really good. But I did enjoy the views. I think the views were amazing. It was so hard to run a race.
Yeah.
And be looking up at like 100-foot sandstone walls. And you're just like, holy smokes. Like, I wish I had my camera.
Yeah, definitely. It goes back to what we were talking about, you know, the takeaway of a race is the experience.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, with what you just said, I think that's one of your biggest takeaways is that experience and everything. And now you know how to get better for the next one.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's something that, like, you know, at first I was like, you know what, I'm not going to talk about. But then I'm like, you know what, I want to share everything that I go through in running, because, you know, you see the people that just post nothing but their wins or their amazing races, but you never hear about the people that train for a race and then it goes down, or just is a downfall. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. And I feel like we need more stories like that. We need more stories of like, oh wow, like this person trained so much, he's so fit, and then boom, he hit a wall. What happened? Or
right,
you know. So to hear those stories are good, because then it gives, you know, the people that follow that the realness, you know.
Yeah.
Not just the successes and the, you know, the home runs, you know.
Right.
And that's also why, you know, I haven't been running a lot of races, is because, you know, I want to do these races, but I want to do them to the best of my ability. So that's right. Why, like with the Javelina 100K, I wanted to run that race and I wanted to run a fast time, but I had some injuries that hit me like maybe 2 weeks out. And there was like literally almost a month, the injury happened a month out, and there was like maybe 3 weeks of just no running, just because I couldn't run.
I decided
to pull out. I could have ran it and I could have finished, but to me, I want to run these races to the best of my ability, and I really want to push myself and see what I could do and if I can be in the mix up with some of the top dogs. So I'm building towards something that is going to be hopefully great.
Right. And it's just like you said earlier, you want to be the best through your shoes.
Yeah. I want to do that. And if I feel like I'm not ready yet, you know, I'll do the race, but I'm not going to like go out like crazy hard. So that's why, like I said, with this marathon I did, you know, it's a good point of direction of where I need to be. Nutrition was good. The body was good. It's just the legs gave out. So I need to work on strength, and I just need to run more and train and be more serious into that. So
I hear you. Hey, Brandon, I am going to move into transitioning into the five to stay alive. But before we do that, is there anything you would like to say or revert to before we continue?
No, I think we got everything.
Okay, so before we move into the five to stay alive, we got a couple warm-up questions here. The first one is going to be about your homeland, and hopefully I get this right, but do you know what ditat deus means?
Ditat deus?
Yes.
No.
All right, so that's actually Latin for God enriches, and that is the motto for the state of Arizona.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, trust me. So when I do these, when I go and do my research and everything, I try to learn, you know, a little bit of tidbits just to throw you guys off and everything.
Yeah, you're going to throw me off a lot.
Okay, so what do we have, or what does Brandon have next coming up? I know you said in February you have the Black Canyon and everything, but what else past that? Do you see anything?
So the Black Canyon 100K, and then... I'm going to do the Monument Valley 50K, which is going to be in March. So literally right after.
Okay.
And my big buildup is wanting to do Western States 100 miler. So that is why I am putting my focus into, you know, the 100K distance and then further on, because, the kind of backtracking to, I was talking about, you know, UTMB, that being one of many races I want to check off.
Yeah.
UTMB is one of them, and the other is Western States. Western States I want to do. That's like my two big races that I want to experience. You know, the end goal is hopefully Western States, and I'm going to do everything I can to to be the best I can for that day. So a lot of training.
I hear you. So two things that stand out to what you just said. So number one, I might see you at Monument Valley this year. Well, next year. Make that next year.
Okay, nice.
But yeah, I might be able to see you there. And you know what would be a good run for you to get a golden ticket or some good training?
Crazy Mountain. the Crazy Mountain. So that's another one that I'm like, I'm really thinking about doing, because I know we talked about it while I was pacing you, and I did look up the race and was like, man, this is pretty cool. You showing me that buckle, I'm like, dang.
Yeah,
there you go.
There it is again.
A bunch of races I want to do. And then I also kind of, you know, want to get back into the, like, I want to do a marathon, like a fast marathon. And okay. I want to prep, like have an actual prep for it. You know, like 3 month training block or something like that, where it's focused on speed and trying to run something quick.
Okay.
Because I know I'm not going to be this fast forever. So I kind of want to do it now.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. And then save the ultra, the longer stuff for when I get a little older.
Okay. Sounds good, man.
And now let's move on to the five to stay alive. These are questions that I ask every guest about themselves and what keeps them going. Mr. Navahoka, are you ready to answer the five to stay alive?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Question number one. Do you run with or without music? And if so, what is one power song on your running playlist that motivates you?
Ooh, I run with and without music. It all depends. On my easy runs, I'll run with music. Without my easy runs or a workout, I'm a little more laser focused on that. But yeah.
Okay.
One of my songs that I'm on right now is probably Try by Pink.
All right. Keep in mind that this song will be added to the Spotify guest playlist for listeners to download. And this song is a representation of you. Everyone out there in podcast land, you can go to the Run True Diaries Spotify page and download the guest playlist. Question number two. What are some things in your life that have positively changed since you've started running?
Since I've been running, I'm more clear. My day goes a lot smoother, I feel like. And I'm just more of an open-minded person and a lot more calm, I guess you can say, when I do my run.
That's good.
Yeah. It keeps me balanced, I should say.
Ooh, there you go.
It makes me have a balanced life.
Question number three. In your opinion, what is one thing that an athlete should avoid in their journey to becoming a better runner?
One thing they should avoid? They should avoid trying not to be a professional athlete from the start.
There you go.
Taking things slow, taking your easy days easy, your hard days hard, and recovering. Drinking your water and sleep. Sleep is important.
Yes. Running your own race.
Running your own race, yeah.
Question number four. Finish this statement. When it comes to long distance running, Brandon cannot leave the house without his
Hokas.
Hokas.
And that's the Tecton X2, right?
Tecton X2, yep. Can't leave without them.
Yeah, trust me, I'm the same way with that one.
And question number five. Do you have a running workout or a life mantra?
For me, there's a few things or two things. One is keep digging. That's just, the shovel comes out when it's time to dig. You got to dig when things get hard. You just got to keep digging that shovel.
Yeah.
That, and then, just the thought of we are still here as Navajo, as Native Indigenous people. That's something that is always with me and something that I look at all the time before races, when I go to races,
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of races I've been to where I'm the only Native and I'm just like, I got to represent. I got to be here for my people. So, yeah.
That is amazing.
Hey, that was the Fast Five. Thank you for those answers. Those are all the questions that I have for this conversation. Is there anything you'd like to say, add, or revisit? Any shout outs you want to give before we bring this episode to a close?
Yeah, I just want to give a big shout out to you, the Running Shoe Diary. Thank you for having me on. And it was amazing, meeting you for the first time at Javelina and pacing you. Experience will definitely be a part of my life forever.
There's
20 miles were awesome. I mean, I learned so much about you that's the best way of meeting a person is through running and actually just being there and watching them suffer. So yeah, thank you for having me on. I'd like to give a big shout out to my family and my friends and my loved ones out there for supporting me and the journey I'm on. I'd like to give a big shout out to Hoka and Naked Belt Innovation. They've always kind of been there and have helped me out in this journey and helping me, do what I love. So
that is amazing. Hey, Brandon, thank you for being a guest on the show. Your success as a runner is motivation for us all. Your willingness to help others and promote them through your photography is definitely a wake-up call, and it shows us how we can use today's technology in a brotherly way. Lastly, your tenacity to showcase your traditional values through your continued success is simply amazing. So again, Brandon, it was my honor to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome. And keep putting one foot in front of the other, and I'll see you out there on the trail, brother.
Yeah, see you out there, man.
We're approaching a finish line, but before we cross, here's some news and views. That was Brandon Dugay. And as mentioned before, he is at the forefront of the Indigenous running movement. Brandon's genuine love for his culture, his hobbies, and running are all tied together and exemplified best through his selfless actions. I want to strengthen this statement by highlighting a few points from our conversation. Take it away, Brandon.
I'm going to do this like GoFundMe and kind of like help raise money for families that live on the reservation that don't have water tanks. Yeah, and then, you know, and that's one thing that like it stopped, of course, because of COVID, but that's something that I still want to continue. But yeah, so, you know, we did that film and we shot all of it, you know, in areas that I grew up in, and places that have a good meaning and a good place in my heart. One thing that, you know, really sits in my heart and will for a long time is the experience that not that I had, but the people that were there on the set. Wow. Because they have never been to the reservation, they've never seen this kind of landscape. So for me and my family to show them where we're from, what we see as home, showing them our culture. You know, we made blue corn mush for them. We made Navajo tea for them. We, you know, had them sleep in a hogan. We had them go outside and chop wood and bring it into the hogan and showed them like, all right, now you guys got to heat up the hogan. And they're like, oh, it's cold. And like, all right, you got to go outside and chop some wood because that's the only way you're going to get warm.
Wow.
And, you know, giving them that experience means a lot. The thought of, we are still here as Navajo, as Native, Indigenous people. You know, that's something that is always with me and something that I look at all the time before races, when I go to races, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of races I've been to where I'm the only Native and I'm just like, you know, I got to represent. I gotta
definitely.
Here. I got to be here for my people. So, yeah. And just be the best for them through my shoes, I guess you could say.
These highlighted points exemplify how running can be used in a positive manner for the good of our families, other people, and even communities. As an Indigenous runner, Brandon takes pride in his family traditions, shares his culture with everyone involved in his projects, and is an outstanding representative for the entire Indigenous running community. It's a lot of hard work, but you're doing an amazing job, my friend. Thank you for helping me crush a sub-24 100 miler. Thank you for being a guest on the Run Shoe Diaries podcast. And thank you for all the great things you're doing with your running adventures. The following are your words, and they fit perfectly. So whether you're representing a brand, a team, a community, or your family, be the best for them through your shoes. We're super proud of you, Brandon. Keep up the amazing work, my friend. Next, Brandon, a.k.a. Mr. Navajoka, is adding Tribe by Pink to the Run Shoe Diaries Spotify guest playlist. It's a song that'll have you digging down deep to give even more when you definitely thought you were already done. From rodeo to running, Brandon's journey has brought back some nostalgia. So that being said, I'm going to be adding a Brooks & Dunn golden oldie from the 8-second soundtrack. It's titled Ride 'em High, Ride 'em Low. And that brings a Spotify guest playlist of 28 songs. Download and enjoy. And with that, we have crossed the finish line. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or guest recommendations, contact me at runshoe.diaries@gmail.com. Again, that is runshoe.diaries@gmail.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Hold on. Wait, now, isn't Twitter now X? And we also have Threads. I'm so confused. But however you follow us, keyword search Run Shoe Diaries. Thank you for listening to the Run Shoe Diaries podcast, episode 18 with Brandon Dugay. Until next time, remember that with each step comes the decision to take another. So keep putting one foot in front of the other, because it's amazing what you can do on your own two feet, and I'm out.